Case for argument is Maryland Casualty versus Mid-Continent Casualty. We're ready to hear from the appellant.
Thank you, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, Barbara Barrett on behalf of Mid-Continent Insurance Company. We're the appellant in this case. I know it's been a long morning. I wish it was something more stimulating I'm going to be talking about, but yet again, it's insurance. So.
It excites anyway. Us greatly. So
And I feel kind of like this is deja vu because I actually was the last case heard in this very courtroom on the Ohio Casualty versus Unigard case that we cite, and I represented Ohio Casualty. And in that case, we were doing the same thing as I'm doing today, which is coming to court saying that I believe that the district court committed error in interpreting the holding in the Sharon Steele case on equitable contribution. In fact, well, first of all, I'll stop for a second. I think the court erred on two issues. First of all, by saying that this particular, the equitable contribution, is based on contract, so that the 4-year statute of limitation for equitable causes of action in Utah didn't apply. Secondly, he also indicated that he thought that there was no demonstration that there wasn't a duty to defend based upon the number of exclusions that we pointed out. Now, while most CGL policies have a standard exclusion L, the your work policy exclusion, which provides an exception for general contractors, because of all the construction defect litigation and the high cost of policies, Mid-Continent's policy is different, for instance, than the Maryland Casualty case. It has a CG-2294 endorsement, which takes out that exception, which used to be how all insurance policies were. But there's no longer an exception for work done by a general contractor's subcontractor. And so that's why this is a different policy than Maryland Casualty's, and that's the most significant reason there was a denial of coverage by Mid-Continent. And when you choose to buy this type of policy, of course, it comes with a real good benefit. The premiums are very, very low. So, the general contractor we're talking about here, Redpoint, from 2001 to 2002, had the Maryland Casualty policy without the CG-2294. But then from 2002 to 2004, purchased the Mid-Continent one, saving a lot of premium dollars, but it does take out that exception for the construction defects work done by subcontractors. And in every single solitary case where they've looked at the CG-2294, which, by the way, is an ISO, a standard form now for CGL policies, every court case has never held that it is ambiguous or unenforceable. Sometimes they've held that it doesn't actually apply in that particular situation, but they've never said it's ambiguous or unenforceable. So with that background, I will take us forward. On December 3rd, 2008, Redpoint and Maryland Casualty tendered defense to Mid-Continent for the lawsuit by the HOA against Redpoint, the general contractor. And on December 3rd, 2008, Mid-Continent denied that tender. And it's undisputed that that denial was received by Maryland Casualty and by the insured. But then things moved forward, and apparently Maryland Casualty and Redpoint and the HOA entered into a settlement at some point in time. but no deck action asserting an equitable contribution case was filed by Maryland Casualty until July 15, 2014. Now, that is more than 4 years after the denial. And as Sharon Steele found in 1997, that was the first time the Utah Supreme Court actually acknowledged that one carrier had an actual right to sue another carrier for fees and costs that it had paid to defend another insured when both of them had consecutive policies. And in that case, if you read it, it goes on and it looks at various states, and it notes that the trend in the United States is to find that there is an equitable cause of action. Not a cause of action, though, brought on contract of any sort. An equitable cause of action. And that in Utah, you can file such a thing. And then it also stipulates as to apportionment of fees and costs and how they think that that can be more fairly done. Now, in the Ohio casualty case I was talking about earlier, what happened in that case is the district court in that case found that both policies, Ohio's and Unigard's, had other insurance clauses, which my position was only occurs if you have concurrent policies. In other words, you have two carriers that cover the same insured at the same time. That's what Appleman says. That's what everybody says. But the district court said, no, actually, what I think it does is it is language that controls how these fees and costs should be split up. So I was ruled against on that, and I came to this court, and I made the argument that the Utah Supreme Court in Sharon Steele said that's not the way it should be, had those same kind of cases, because other insurance clauses are on everyone's policies. They are. As are the automatic assignment of rights so an insurer can go after someone who it's paid something to on behalf of its insured. So it's not,
and that's what you have here. You have an assignment of right. And that, as you keep peeling the onion here, goes back to insurance policies.
But that is
and
an assignment
that,
of right.
Does that make it a contract claim, ultimately? A secure
no.
statute?
No, not anything, not even.
Not even close.
No, because, again, way back when, in at the time that they decided Sharon Steele, all insurers have those automatic assignments of rights, but those are assignments of rights as between an insured and their insurer. What's ironic about all this is this whole concept is explained very well in Judge Benson's second order in September of 2016, where he says that there's no privity of contract between Maryland and Mid-Continent, and that it's all equitable, and that the only policies he's talking about is between the insured and the insurer. So if you read the two, even Judge Benson seems to be mixed up if you read his two orders. The one in the first one that he issues, and then the second one he issues. And the first one is on 8-10 of 2015, and the one regarding prejudgment interest on 9-21-16. He denies their prejudgment interest on the basis of a written contract, because he says there's no contract. But going on, once again, back to where I was.
Well, no contract that would require the payment of prejudgment interest, maybe. Maybe that's what he meant.
Well, no, because it's just arising out of a contract. But I'll get to the four-year and six-year statute of limitation. In Utah, in order for the six-year statute of limitation to apply, there's the Breckling test, which says that the written instrument has to actually, I want to get this right, if the liability arises, assumed, or is imposed out of a written instrument, not remotely, but immediately. And here we're talking about a contract. The only assignment contract that Maryland Casualty can point to is the one between its insured and it. So that's not an immediate written instrument that requires Mid-Continent to pay anything. The other test that's announced is if the instrument, the written instrument, acknowledges or states a fact from which the law implies an obligation to pay. There is nothing in the assignment in the Maryland Casualty provision that requires, that says Mid-Continent, you have to pay. There just isn't. Finally, the motion for summary judgment that was filed by Maryland Casualty was only filed on the basis of their equitable contribution claim. To quote their memo, in their original opening memo, they state, we need not prove breach of contract, a breach of contract claim against Mid-Continent. Maryland has an independent equitable claim against Mid-Continent under Utah law. Insurers can pursue another insurer for equitable contribution, and then it cites Sharon Steele. Thus, whether Maryland has pled or proved a breach of contract claim is irrelevant. Now, that's in their motion for summary judgment. By the same token, in the order where their motion for summary judgment is granted, once again, the only type of claim that's referred to is not the breach of contract claim, but the equitable contribution claim, which Judge Benson then also further enforces by his order of 9/21/16 on prejudgment interest. Finally, it was not until the reply memo to the motion for summary judgment did Maryland even bring up anything about the six-year statute of limitations, which is why earlier we didn't move to certify. Now, in the Ohio Casualty case, I was sitting here arguing it, and one of the judges said, so you're telling me, Ms. Barrett, you think the federal court got it wrong and the Utah Supreme Court would get it right? And I said, yes, not knowing that you guys on your own certified it to the Utah Supreme Court. And then it went to the Utah Supreme Court, and my interpretation was correct. I do think that this is a good issue to certify to the Utah Supreme Court because it hits every one of the requirements. First of all, I don't know if you know it, but a large law firm from Oregon came into Utah, and we have quadrupled our number of HOA cases on construction defect cases, so much so that the Utah legislature just enacted legislation making it nearly impossible for them to sue anymore. So it's coming up a lot now. And I do think that it will come up a lot if there's no other case law on it. This case, an equitable contribution, keeps coming up over and over again. Anyway, it meets every one of the requirements. But I do think that if you look at the breakline test about a written instrument and when a cause of action is based upon one for the statute of limitations, it just doesn't meet the criteria here. And so it's a 4-year statute of limitations for an equitable cause of action. And under that, they have no claim. And then I'm running out of time, so I better stop.
You have 46 seconds.
Yeah, I'll be real brief next.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Let's address the statute of limitation arguments raised by Mid-Continent first and foremost. Mid-Continent's argument is largely based upon a singular but faulty premise, which is the only issue, the only claim that was decided was an equitable contribution claim. And a very quick and clear review of the record shows that is completely false. Maryland moved for a motion for partial summary judgment only on the duty to defend. Maryland took the position that it didn't have to prove either the equitable contribution claim or any breach of contract claim to establish the duty to defend because it didn't need to. The only thing the motion for partial summary judgment asked Judge Benson to do is to determine that Mid-Continent did indeed have a duty to defend. And that is the only thing, other than resolving the statute of limitations, that Judge Benson did. And in doing so, he did not make a ruling on any particular claim. Now, fast forward after that finding. What did Mid-Continent do after the resolution of the duty to defend? They stipulated to judgment. And they stipulated to judgment on all three of Maryland's claims. Maryland undisputably pled a declaratory judgment claim, an equitable contribution claim, and a breach of contract claim, which it did indeed obtain through an assignment of rights.
Let me ask you about that contract claim.
Yes, Your Honor.
You're saying your contract claim is based on an assignment from the insured.
Yes, Your Honor.
That is your contract claim.
It is. We have obtained their breach of contract claim by dint of the transfer of rights.
It's not another contract claim we're talking about here.
No. We obtained Red Point Homes' breach contract claim.
Okay.
Red Point Homes.
Okay. What is their contract claim against MCC?
To enforce the duty to defend.
Because they didn't pay the cost of defense.
Because Mid-Continent did not defend.
Right. But Maryland did defend.
Correct.
So the insured, in fact, didn't incur any cost in defending.
Correct. But they still... Go ahead, Your Honor.
Well, no, go ahead.
They still have the right to enforce that contractual right under their own contract.
Do you have any cases that allow an insured to insure... to sue an insurer for failure to defend, for breach of the duty to defend, when another insurer, in fact, fully represented the insured and incurred all the costs of defense?
The Utah courts have not addressed that.
Okay. Do you have in any other jurisdiction?
I don't believe we've located a case that addresses that issue, Your Honor.
Have you found cases to the contrary?
No. And Mid-Continent didn't provide any either, Your Honor.
No, there are several to the contrary. And they make sense to me. What injury is there to the insured who didn't incur any expenses? There may be a breach,
mm-hmm.
but there's no claim because the insured didn't incur any cost.
But the provision itself specifically contemplates that, Your Honor. The language, the unambiguous language in the provision in the policy that Maryland has with its contract, with its policyholder, speaks to payments that the carrier makes. So it contemplates a situation exactly like that here.
Wait. I thought we were suing on the contract with MCC.
Yes, we are, Your Honor.
Okay. So where in the MCC contract is there any damage? Where is there provision that says you can sue MCC and get some money when you're not out anything?
The insurance policy is not going to address that issue. The insurance policy gives Red Point Homes, the insured, the right to enforce the contract.
Right.
The contract required the duty to defend. Red Point Homes
But a claim for breach of contract requires damages.
Correct.
What are the damages that Red Point incurred from MCC's failure to defend?
They could have any number of damages. Those issues weren't addressed by it. They could have deductibles. They could have monies that they were out of pocket with regard to defense costs, personal counsel costs. They could have any number of injuries and damages as a result of...
Did you allege any of those?
No, Your Honor. We were seeking the monies that we paid as provided by the transfer of rights provision.
Yeah, but why would the insured have... Why would Red Point have a claim against MCC for what Maryland paid.
Because that is transferred under our policy, those rights, because it has a right to enforce that contractual obligation.
No. Only if the insured is owed something. If the insured has a claim, you're right. At least you have a good argument. That if the insured has a claim against somebody, then the insured has to assign that claim to Maryland.
Right.
So my question has to do with what is the claim that Redpoint has against MCC for violation of the duty to defend when there was no injury. There was another insurance company, you guys, who paid for it. And the way
right.
that's dealt with, because it's unfair to you to have to pay all the costs when another insurer has to pay,
mm-hmm.
that's dealt with by equitable contribution. But that's not the contract claim by the insured against MCC. That's where I'm – I see your claim.
I understand, Your Honor.
I don't understand how that's a claim that was assigned from Redpoint to Maryland.
They have a right to enforce that contract, and the right to enforce that contract is assigned to us. But I think the overarching issue with regard to the statute of limitations is whether you're looking at this as an equitable contribution claim
right.
or a breach of contract claim.
Right.
The test for which statute of limitation applies is whether any claim is founded upon a written instrument. It's not whether Maryland is a party to that contract, because in the Brackline case, the court specifically applied the 6-year statute of limitations, even when the party seeking to enforce a contractual right under the written instrument was not a party to that contract.
Do you agree that an equitable contribution claim, that if for an equitable contribution claim, there's a 4-year statute of limitations?
No, Your Honor. The 4-year statute of limitations, the statutes of limitation in Colorado are not divided up in between equitable and contractual claims. The question is whether or not they're founded upon a written instrument. And under Brackline and Lilly that came afterwards, the Utah courts have not looked and have not analyzed the issue of whether or not the party was to the contract. It was whether the liability arose from the contract. And that is exactly the case. The only way Maryland can prove an equitable contribution claim is by proving that Midcontinent had a duty to defend under its policy. It's Midcontinent's liability stems from the contractual obligations it owed to Redpoint. It's founded upon a written instrument.
But haven't the Utah courts stated that equitable contribution claim sounds in equity, not in contract? The contract is irrelevant.
It's
an equitable remedy.
The Unigard case, which spoke to the apportionment of the defense cost,
yeah.
was a matter of equity. But in order to determine whether that carrier had a duty to defend, they had to review that contract. Now, to determine how you whack up the defense cost, for lack of a better phrase, determine exactly what amount this carrier owes and exactly what amount this carrier owes. That is a matter of equitable principles between those two parties.
Now,
but in order...
Let me make sure I'm understanding where you are.
Yes.
The argument you're making now is not dependent at all on the assignment of Redpoint's rights to Maryland. Is that
we've always made that argument, Your Honor. That's we've made that argument throughout the entire of this briefing.
What argument?
That it's not dependent upon the assignment of rights.
Because as I understood your briefing, you had two arguments.
We did.
What I had been pursuing was whether you really have a contract claim
correct.
Assigned from Redpoint
yes.
to you. Now you're saying the equitable claim, regardless of whether there was that assignment, the equitable contribution claim sounds in contract and is entitled to the 6-year limitations period. But that's a different argument. Am I correct?
Yes, that we've already
okay.
made.
Okay. You know, I wasn't saying
okay.
you reserved it.
Sure, I understand, Your Honor. Just want to make sure we were clear.
That's what I was
saying. And the question is, it's not sounding. It's founded upon
right, okay.
a written instrument, just to clarify in terms of
yes.
the case law that the Utah courts
yes.
apply to this type of issue. And that's exactly the issue we have here. You can't prove an equitable contribution claim without proving that Mid-Continent had a duty to defend under its contract. Mid-Continent's liability stems directly from its contractual obligations, and therefore it is founded upon a written instrument.
So is the appellant here misreading Sharon Steele?
In terms of?
Of whether or not this sounds in equity or in contract.
Well, the equitable contribution claim is an equitable claim, but I think what Mid-Continent is neglecting to notice is that the Utah courts have been very careful to speak to resolving the duty to defend and then apportioning those defense costs. The apportionment of defense costs is not at issue in this litigation. The parties have stipulated to an apportionment. There was no dispute as to apportionment. But what Sharon Steele and the Unigard cases implicitly and if not expressly hold is that you have to first resolve the duty to defend. Because after all, if the other carrier has no duty to defend, there's no basis to seek an apportionment. And that duty to defend must be determined based upon an eight corners test, as recognized by the Utah Court of Appeals, which is the four corners of the policy and the four corners of the complaint. Now here, with respect to the duty to defend, this court, courts throughout this circuit, and the Utah courts have repeatedly held that the duty to defend is extraordinarily broad.
Are you advocating a rule that if there are two insurers, one insured, and there's a fight about apportioning the costs, that every single time it's going to be a six-year statute of limitations?
Yes, because at the end of the day, it is founded upon that contract, because the only way you prove that equitable contribution claim is first and foremost proving coverage under the policy.
With or without an assignment?
With or without an assignment.
So you're really not relying on that contract between the insured?
No. I mean, it was an argument that we presented to the court to further explain the basis for Maryland's position and to further distinguish and explain the differences between the two statute of limitations. It's not a matter of equitable versus contractual claims and determining which statute applies. It is founded upon a written instrument, the liability flowing from that written instrument.
Has the Utah Supreme Court ever gone that far as announcing a rule like that? Isn't it an open question in Utah whether equitable contribution would be six or four, depending on a variety of circumstances, instead of an absolute rule?
The Utah courts haven't specifically made the determination as to whether or not it's a 4 or 6 year statute, but I don't believe it's necessary to resolve this case that a court had specifically identified and resolved that issue. There is sufficient authority in Utah that interprets both the 4 year and the 6 year statute and the standard applied to evaluate what is considered to be founded upon a written instrument. Now, with respect to the duty to defend that's governed by the policy language and the allegations of the complaint, Mid-Continent has argued that it was unable to determine if it had a duty to defend. The factual allegations of the complaint very clearly fell outside any exclusion. And that's the only thing that Mid-Continent relied upon to avoid the duty to defend were exclusions. There were two exclusions in the briefs presented today. One was this your work exclusion, and one is impaired property. Now, the your work exclusion, even with the exception in their policy, still only bars coverage for property damage to the insured's work. The complaint here very specifically alleged damage to other property, the association's real and personal property. And there were not mere allegations of loss of use. There were specific allegations of consequential, resultant, and continuing damage. There were specific allegations outside these policy language in these particular exclusions.
That's been my frustration reading the briefs, is I can't tell exactly what language you're relying on, what the other is that is beyond the exclusion. Can you just recite?
Sure. It appears at Appendix 139, 148, 152. There's damage to the association's real and personal property, losses to property of others, and damage to the work of others. There are consequential, resultant, and compensatory damages. These were specific allegations in the complaint. We believe the district court properly determined the duty to defend in the statute of limitations. Thank you.
Thank you.
I will be very quick because I have to be. First of all, this case isn't any different from the Sharon Steele case. They went in there trying to say that the other carrier also had a duty to defend, but the court announced what that cause of action is called is not a cause of action on a written contract, but equitable contribution, which was unrecognized until the Sharon Steele case. Also, Enray Hupilani Trust case says that in Utah, claims for equity or grounded in equity are the four-year statute of limitations. Additionally, if you actually read what the break line test says, is the written instrument has to actually say that the person has an obligation to pay, and it can't be a remote claim arising out of it, but it has to be a direct and immediate one. Finally, I think if the court just looks at Judge Benson's own order of September of 2016, he does a fairly good job about talking about these are equitable claims and there's no privity of contract between the two, and goes out of his way to
right,
say
that's
that.
That's on the interest point, right? That's
yeah.
On the interest point. Yeah.
Right, but that's also because counsel here was saying that it's based on a written contract. So because it's based on a written contract, you get 10%. Mm-hmm. But now you can't change it up when you're arguing something else. Then finally...
You're out of time. You're running over. It goes up.
Anyway, can I just say one thing about the judgment? Yes, we stipulated to a judgment, but we also said by stipulating, Mid-Continent does not waive its rights to appeal the very issues we're appealing, which is exactly what we did in the Ohio casualty case. We just needed to appeal it. But finally, why don't we just have the Utah Supreme Court do it? They did a great job last time.
Okay.
Save you guys some paper.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this morning. Case is submitted. Court is